All right, ready.
All right, what's going on, Razzball Nation? This is Sun, joined by the illustrious Brent, the Fantasy Dick, and Craig, drinking tea and eating crumpets across the pond. How you guys doing?
Doing great, man.
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad.
All right, cool. Let's just get right into it. Obviously, the big trade a few days ago, Cavs, Lakers. Give me your thoughts, Brent.
Yeah, I mean, now that I've kind of had a few days to let this one sink in, you know, the initial, you know, I get the ESPN updates on my phone, so I'm sitting there and I get the da-na-na, da-na-na little update on, and I look down and I see Isaiah Thomas trade, and I'm like, what? It's like cut off. So I click, find out it's the Lakers, and then I see they're getting Nance and Clarkson back. In my initial, I swear this is my initial reaction was, that's awesome for the Cavs. Like, that's exactly what they needed, because I love Larry Nance. I love him in real life. I love him in fantasy. I think Jordan Clarkson gives him, you know, a super energetic, big point guard / shooting guard off the bench. I mean, they just improved dramatically on defense and with size, and they got younger. So it was perfect for surrounding LeBron with role players without big egos for this season, and then getting younger for going forward. So they really, I think the Cavs knocked it out of the park. I saw a lot of people saying the Lakers hit the home run, and I do. I think it was perfect for them too. They set themselves up to get two max players, and they get a guy in Thomas who's going to be super motivated. And who knows? I mean, most people think he's not going to come back on the Lakers. So I think we'll see. The Lakers would only do it if they can get him at a steal on a one-year contract. But I don't know. I think it's great for both teams as far as fantasy goes. I think Larry Nance needs to be owned. Clarkson probably still owned. Isaiah Thomas, I think it's really good for Isaiah Thomas's fantasy value. I think it's a good landing spot. I think he's going to get a lot of playing time while Lonzo Ball's out. I think we're going to see a lot of combinations of Thomas next to Lonzo Ball. And I think Thomas's agent has already come out and said, no, he is starting. So I don't know how much pull an agent has with the coach. If that'll even, like, he's already making friends at the new, on the new team. He didn't make a lot of friends on the Cavs. So I think what the Cavs did was they just got rid of all the egos. They probably thought Thomas didn't have an ego. He had to step up for Boston, but that's not who he is. But we found out he does want the ball. That is who he is. And they can't have a guy like that around LeBron, it looks like. So he goes. They surround him with young guys without egos. And I love it for both teams.
All right, cool. Mr. Craig?
Well, the Cavs, well, they gave LeBron James exactly what he wanted, a chance to reboot, new players around him. Like Brent said, a lot of the egos have gone. And I think Isaiah Thomas going out is going to be big for them. I think it was an issue there that was just becoming more and more abundant. He gets his fresh start, although is he going to be bought out by the Lakers? Who knows? This clearly isn't the same Isaiah Thomas that we saw last season. The hip injury and the lengthy absence has clearly affected his game. But free Chetty Osman, probably not a guy that most people are overly familiar with, but he came on, a couple of nights ago in the overtime win against Minnesota, played some really good defense. And
he looked pretty good.
And he actually did everything that Isaiah Thomas doesn't, and that was able to sort of defend late down the stretch. And I think there was an interview afterwards with Ty Lue where he was like, wow, I didn't realize this kid could do this kind of thing. But the defense is definitely there, so he's definitely a speculative ad, I think, given everything that's happened for deep league owners there. I wouldn't go out and add him in a, you know, a 10-team or 12-team standard league. But if you're playing in, you know, 16-team league or above, definitely worth speculative ad, I think. I didn't think a whole lot really changed for anyone in this trade from a fantasy standpoint. I think, you know, maybe a bump for Larry Nance Jr. I think Jordan Clarkson pretty much stays the same. I think we're in for a whole lot of drama. Isaiah Thomas and LaVar Ball in the same vicinity in California. Wow. another soap opera waiting to happen there. But in terms of fantasy, I actually didn't think a whole lot changes other than, you know, LeBron's going to continue to beast. He's got the role players around him. I think George Hill probably sees a bit of a boost. He's in a place where he's definitely wanted now and certainly needed with his perimeter defense. So I think you can rely on George Hill to get that consistency in minutes. You know, he's going to help you with everything you expect him to, the threes, the steals. The field goal percentage should be pretty decent with efficiency. You know, one of the best three-point efficient shooters there are in the league. It should only help with LeBron as well there. But obviously, the ball handling opportunities are not going to be there. But I thought this trade in particular, I thought that most people, it was kind of a stamp at value. I kind of think everyone got what they wanted. Lakers managed to clear the cap space that they wanted. I mean, they were ready to give Clarkson away for next to nothing just to get him off the books. But for them to get that first round pick and clear the cap space, I thought was absolutely huge for them. So yeah, I think it was sort of win-win all round, if you like. What was your thoughts, Stan?
Yeah, I'll start with the Lakers. Just, you know, I'm a Laker fan, so you know, I was very interested in this trade. It pains me to lose Nance. I really like him. You know, he's a team player, high IQ guy. You know, doesn't demand the ball. You know, does everything that, you know, the team needs. And you know, he's a highlight reel. He's really fun to watch. So it was painful to see him go. But, you know, in order to get something, you know, you need to give. Jordan Clarkson, you know, he's a very inefficient shooter. He's athletic. You know, he can break defenders off the dribble. But, you know, he can be a black hole at times.
Isn't he like 6'6"? At the guard?
Yeah, he's big.
George Hill's like that big too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, the Cavs got, you know, some more. They got younger, obviously. Both Nance and Clarkson are 25, and then they got more athletic. And, you know, I'll get to the Cavs in a little bit. I just want to focus on the Lakers for right now. So, you know, obviously the contract, the Clarkson contract was like 2 years left, like almost 15 mil each, I think 12 and 13. So, you know, they clear the cap space and, you know, like you guys mentioned, they're able to get two max players if they do some other things. So they're set up for 18 and 19, you know, in free agency. I think a big reason past that, you know, the cap situation is Josh Hart. You know, he's been balling and he's been proven that he's, you know, he's born for this league. So, you know, the Lakers hit on Kuzma and Hart. So I think that made them a little bit more comfortable in you know, doing the trades. Isaiah Thomas, you know, at first I was like, okay, he's going to play, and it kind of makes sense because he's good in the pick and roll. Lonzo Ball is actually better off the ball. And, you know, so I thought it would be an Isaiah Thomas, Lonzo Ball backcourt. But the more I sat down and thought about it, I actually think Isaiah Thomas, I think there's a small chance that he gets bought out, but I actually don't think he's going to play that much. I think his best role is going to be as like a, you know, 18 to 20 minute guy, like a microwave instant guy off the bench. And, you know, one of the reasons is that, I mean, the best backcourt, the best lineup that I see is Lonzo Ball at the one, KCP at the two, Josh Hart off the bench. I don't see the IT ball combination. I just don't see it. Like, you're going to put KCP on the bench? Like, no, that's not happening. And, you know, Lonzo comes back, IT is not starting over Lonzo Ball. And, you know, he's not going to be re-signed. He's not a part of the future. So, you know, the team is going to want to, you know, get Kuzma. They're going to want Hart play. And so I actually kind of think Isaiah is going to be kind of irrelevant. I think the other person that kind of benefits from the trade is Kuzma. You know, Nance is gone, so it opens up more minutes in the front court. So, you know, that should be good for him. To the Cleveland side.
Wait, for the Lakers for a second, what do you think about Randall? Will it give Randall more minutes too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's been getting run, you know. So yeah. It definitely helps him. Yeah. So yeah, I was just kind of assumed that he was just going to continue to, you know, do what he's been doing. But you know, Kuzma was kind of, his minutes were coming back a little bit. But now I think he definitely gets more run, and you know, like, we've seen what he can do. So I think that's a really good sign. And so the Cleveland.
And well, and one of the things we talked about yesterday, something that I didn't want to leave out, was we were talking about just how much potential Brandon Ingram still has, and you know, this Lakers team, these young guys. I mean, it's going to be really enticing for any free agent to come to LA.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, my dream scenario that, you know, we were talking about yesterday was, you know, if they can get LeBron and Paul George, I mean, that is, it's a sick lineup, right? If you can go Lonzo Ball at the one, KCP at the two, Ingram at the three, George at the four, LeBron at the five. Granted, you can't play that lineup all the time, but that's like their own little lineup of death. And, I mean, that lineup switches everything, right? That defense is going to be sick. Like, you've already seen what OKC is doing with Russ and Paul George. Like, George is like just going nuts, right? So that, you know, that lineup has a lot of potential, and it, you know, it gets me, you know, pretty excited. But you know, a lot of things have to, you know, to, you know, a lot of things would have to come into place for that to happen. So let me touch on the Cleveland side real quick, because I know we got to keep this really short. You know, I wrote in the article on Razzball that, you know, the front office and LeBron, like, they've had animosity and tension for a long time. You know, like, the front office, they've been doing moves without consulting LeBron. LeBron has obviously hated ownership, you know, since he left for Miami. So there's always been, you know, it's always been very contentious. So so this trade is actually kind of funny to me, because, like, it serves everybody's purpose, right? Like, so, you know, the Cavs get younger this year, they get more athletic, so it kind of placates LeBron this year, but it also, you know, like, sets them up and prepares them for life without LeBron. Like, I'm pretty sure LeBron knows he's gone, and I'm pretty sure, you know, Gilbert and Altman know that he's gone. So, yeah, and, you know, like you said earlier, like, the trade helped everybody involved. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. So sorry for babbling so long. Yeah.
Just from what you were saying there, it seems like they're almost doing, have this mentality, this is the Cavs, of like what the Clippers were doing, where they don't want to really sort of hurt the competitiveness of the team too much now, but they want to make sure that the future's looked after as well. Sure. I mean, the fact that they held that Brooklyn pick obviously was huge. They added the athleticism that they needed, and they got younger, and like you said, protected a bit of the future. So it was almost like, you know, it felt like they weren't willing to go all in for this season, but at the same time, you know, they weren't really ready to tank either. I just wanted to go back to Isaiah Thomas just very quickly. I saw some issues with his agent, and his agent saying, you know, Isaiah's not here to come off the bench, so you might as well buy him out. Can you not see all of this causing a bit of drama? I know the stakes aren't quite as high as they were in Cleveland, but obviously you've got LaVar Ball, you know, chomping at the bit wherever he can to attack, wherever he can. I mean, is this not potentially another sort of distraction in Lakerland from where they want to be? Or do you just think the fact that he's out of contract in the summer kind of sort of blows it all a bit, you know, out of the water?
Yeah, for sure. No, it definitely has the potential, but I think there are some things that can prevent it. You know, one is, this is kind of out there, but, you know, Channing Frye, like, he may get bought out at some point, but supposedly, like, he's a really good, like, locker room guy, a veteran, and so, like, you know, he spent some time with IT, so, you know, he will be able to, you know, kind of, you know, massage the situation to some degree if anything did come up. So I think that's, you know, one aspect of it. But I think ultimately it comes down to this. You know, this Lakers situation is, you know, there's no expectations, You know, they're not going to the playoffs, right? It's sure. not going to, you know, it's just more just free-flowing playing. And for IT, like he wants to set himself up to get paid, right? Like, he needs to perform. He needs to show, you know, that he's a, you know, he's a commodity, right? So all this negativity that, you know, he, you know, the perception of him, you know, from Cleveland, like, he needs to change public perception, right? So, you know, because of that, I think he's going to be a lot more conscious and aware of a lot of things that he was doing. I think one of the things, like, when he was in Cleveland, you know, like, he came from Boston and they were winning, right? So they had a certain culture and, you know, they're like, all right, this is the way we do it. This is how we win. And, you know, he goes to Cleveland and he probably sees things a little differently and, you know, like, no effort, like, guys aren't diving on the ball. They're not helping out, communicating on switches, defense, things like that. So, you know, like, you know, he was trying to come in there and be like, hey, you know, like, kind of get everybody riled up. But I don't think he, like, he wasn't in a position, you know, to be taking that role, right? Like, if he was making, you know, 10 of 18 shots or whatever, if he was dropping 30 a game, then, yeah, everyone's like, okay, you know, we hear you. We got you. But, you know, he was playing like shit. So they're like, you know, who are you? Like, screw you, right? And then it just snowballed from there. But, yeah, I don't see it being too bad because, you know, like I said, he needs to, you know, shape up because if he wants to get paid, that's the only way he's got to do it.
Sure.
Yeah, the biggest criticism that I read about this trade was why would because Cleveland, you know, everybody knows LeBron's looking at the Lakers. So the one team that Cleveland does this with opens up, makes that possible for LeBron to go to the Lakers or makes it even more possible. And that was the one criticism I saw. You know, my thought on that is they just happen to have the players they wanted. You know, what do you guys think about that criticism that the Cleveland sort of pushed the door even wider open for LeBron to head to L.A.?
Go for it.
I think there was also an element of looking at it from the other point of view as well. I thought that I understand that, and you know, a lot of this is media talking, media speculation. At the same time, did Gilbert not give LeBron pretty much exactly what he wanted? I mean, we've heard no negativity out of LeBron about everything that's happened over the last couple of days. They have surrounded him with, you know, this chance to sort of rebuild immediately for this championship run. You know, they've done everything in their power to, you know, pretty much appease LeBron. So in other words, it could work the other way, where suddenly LeBron has a bit more faith in Cleveland's decision making and you know, the possibility of him actually staying and signing on. It's media speculation at this point. And we hear about the fact of, well, you know, have they just opened the door for LA? Well, possibly, but there's, you know, there's so many other clubs out there as well which have been trying to put themselves in this position, whether it, you know, you're talking the Clippers or whether you're talking the Magic or, you know, so it's easy to look at it and say, well, have they? But at the same time, you know, it's the same speculation you can make on anyone that's sort of cleared the cap, relevant cap space, really.
Yeah, like in my article, I tried to set it up as like a spy movie, you know, like just the contentiousness between the LeBron camp and you know, the management of Cleveland, and they're kind of just playing off each other. And you know, I was kind of making a joke about the whole situation, and how it came down to it was like each camp approached the Lakers because each camp saw that the Lakers were probably the best, you know, partner for each of them. And it's just, so it just happened to work out that, you know, they were trying to play each other, but in the end, you know, they ended up just doing the same thing with the same party. But there's 0% chance LeBron goes back to Cleveland. Like I said, from the preseason, like, only way he goes back to Cleveland is if Dan Gilbert sells him the team. That's the only way.
Well, that's also another possibility as well, though, isn't it? Let's face it.
That would be crazy.
Yeah, it would be. Just one last point on this. Do you not feel, my initial thought on this deal was, given that the the Lakers were desperate to clear that cap space. And you know, everything that I'd heard was they were ready to pretty much give pretty much ready to give Jordan Clarkson away for any form of expiring deal that they can. I understand, obviously, they had to give the sweetener in Larry Nance Jr. to get a deal done. But was there anything in your mind that suggested that maybe the Lakers would have taken this deal without that first-round pick? I thought getting that first-round pick was huge. And I thought, given what the Lakers were trying to achieve, I thought there was a real possibility of it happening without Cleveland giving that first. So I thought Lakers did really well. How did you feel about it?
That's why... you know, what was it, like a week, has it been over a week? Yeah, maybe a week and a half ago when, you know, the Lakers basically leaked that, oh, we're going to pivot to 2019. Like, to me, that was like the biggest, you know, load of bullshit. Like, you know, the only reason why they're doing that is, you know, to basically, you know, like alert teams like, oh, you know, like just in case, like, you know, it's like throwing out the bait in the mousetrap, right? Their intention has been pretty clear from the get-go. And you know they got Cleveland to bite. I was really expecting both Randall and Clarkson to go, and you know I did hear some of the same things that you were hearing, and I was pretty much thought that they would be done. So I was kind of preparing myself for like you know a second round pick, you know things like that. So you know the fact that they got the first is really lovely. I think I forgot who. Maybe it was like Cole Zwicker or one of those guys, but or Nate Duncan maybe. But you know, he was basically like, yeah, it's you know, Pelinka and Magic have really done a great job because you rarely see the situation where the team is able to improve itself, accumulate assets in terms of draft picks and clean their books. Yeah, the flexibility that they have is really, really, really good.
And just for Isaiah Thomas's perspective, like talk about, his mind must just be, he must just be staring at the wall, just going, what happened? he was the hero of Boston. He was the feel good story of the year. He was MVP talk. And then all of a sudden, you got to attach a first round pick to him, two different trades, just to get rid of him. And
that hip was no joke, though, was it? I mean, Boston knew something was going on there. You know, when you were a player like, and I said this when you were talking about the comeback with Isaiah Thomas, I wasn't convinced, if you remember. The reason was, you know, the type of game that he has where he really relies on that explosion. You know, it's no joke coming back from a hip injury like that. I didn't anticipate it to really sort of come in and explode, and certainly not this season. And I still think there's, you know, quite a journey for him to come back from. I think it's going to be interesting for Lonzo Ball to have, you know, a real pure offensive threat around him. I think, you know, it could be huge for Lonzo Ball's value if Lonzo Ball, you know, comes back at some point in the near future. You know, with a hip injury like that, it's not plain sailing coming back. I don't think you're going to be the same player when you rely on that explosion that he does.
You're right. We've seen that with a lot of these guys, like even Allen Iverson, Monte Ellis, these guys who, because of their size, are at a disadvantage, but because they were so insanely explosive and athletic, they could. Derrick Rose is a good example, and just a little bit of injuries to those legs, and you know, forget it. You know, because they're not shooting over anybody. You know, they can't become. Even Jordan was big enough that you know when he slowed down and lost his explosiveness, he could add that fadeaway jumper to his game. He could add the three pointer to his game because he was tall enough to shoot over people. But when you're a smaller guy, you can't fall back on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was the next trade? Should we stay with Cleveland with all their moves and how that affects fantasy?
Well, like the Hood.
The Hood, Crowder going to the Jazz. What do you think about Rodney Hood coming to the Cavs, son?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've always liked him. You know, he has 30-point upside any night. I love his height, 6'8". Can shoot over anybody. You know, but obviously the injury risk, and, you know, many people consider him kind of soft. Like, he's not a banger. He's not a great defender. But he is long. But, you know, he can score. And he's relatively young. So I think he's a really good fit on the Cavs, because it's LBJ, right? And I heard a stat earlier today, like, so basically in terms of usage, with everybody off, Love, you know, Rose, IT, like everybody gone, his usage rate is like close to 40%.
Wow.
Right. So yeah, we're gonna, you know, I wrote in the daily recap a few days ago, like, I thought that he would kind of chill until the All-Star break, and then once, you know, the All-Star break finished, he'd come back, and, you know, I called him the Le Juggernaut now. Like, he would take over, and like, I kind of equated it to, like, the 2005 Kobe, you know, the usage he had. He was, like, having usage rates in the 45% range, like, a couple of them close to 50% range that year. And, I thought, like, yeah, like, it was going to happen. But then, you know, that was with, you know, Isaiah Thomas, and, right, before the trades. So now, you know, everything changes. But, yeah, with the pieces now, it just kind of accentuates that fact. And I think, you know, 35 to 40% usage rate is going to, you know, daily triple doubles are going to be the norm.
Do you think that my initial thoughts was it was a good move for Hood, it was a good move for Cleveland, and it was a good move for Utah? I don't think, you know, I wouldn't want to say that Utah were ready to give up on him entirely, but at the same time, I don't think they were willing to pay him what he was going to be wanting. I think, you know, a fresh start for Hood in a new system, a new culture, you know, a really talented player, and he hasn't turned out to be the player that we really thought he might be, but again, he's still young, and I think that, you know, this fresh start for him, the Cavs and the Utah, I think it was, you know, in terms of him himself, I thought it was a really good fit, and I think exactly the same for Jay Crowder. I think the Jay Crowder fit in Utah is really, really strong.
I think both the same thing.
Yeah, I felt that both of those guys just found themselves into, you know, really strong positions in terms of what both teams needed. And also, I think, you know, from the player's sort of mental standpoint, I think it was exactly what they needed too. I just thought that, you know, it was a deal that kind of worked both ways. I thought George Hill, again, just what the Cavs needed, some perimeter D, some efficient three-point shooting, and sort of Sacramento became the dumping ground, really, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't understand what Sacramento is doing. Like, I didn't understand what they were doing in the preseason. And, like, I have no freaking idea what they're doing now. Like, why are you holding on? Why are you playing Vince Carter? Like, why, you know?
That was after he said that he was going to stop playing the veterans, giving them heavy run, wasn't it?
Exactly.
So what
yeah,
he did was increase
yeah.
Vince Carter's minutes. Yeah. It's,
I have no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I love what Cleveland did, you know, just like you guys, simply by they just jettisoned all the egos. They jettisoned, you know, Wade, Rose, these guys who, for whatever reason, just didn't get it. They didn't get that they're not the same guys they were. I mean, maybe they look and they feel like, you know, we're right around the same age as LeBron or whatever, but LeBron's just a freak. Like, he's not, you know, he's like Tom Brady. Like, it's not normal to still be playing like he is at that age. And you know, Wade and Rose just didn't seem to get it. They still kind of had that prima donna attitude. And that's why, like, Kevin Love is a great fit on Cleveland, because he's an all-star player, but he doesn't have that attitude, you know? And it seemed like IT was that kind of guy. And I think Cleveland kind of thought he was that kind of guy when they had him, got him back for Kyrie. But I think, even, you know, injury aside, I think that IT wasn't who they thought he was. I think he had that kind of prima donna attitude, and as soon as that started showing, along with the poor play, see ya. You know, Dwayne Wade figuring out, should he start, should he be on the bench, blah, 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 you know, just get out of here. And bring in guys who don't have egos, who can play. I don't necessarily like it for Hood's fantasy value, but I'm holding Hood. Crowder, I mean, I'm holding Hood simply for the fact what Sun said, he could score. And I love any fantasy guy that can put up those kind of points deserves a spot on a team. Crowder, because he's not a huge scorer, I'm just not a big Crowder in fantasy, you know, person. I mean, even like if we're saying like, wow, we hope he gets back to those Celtics numbers from last year, it's like that wasn't even that great. So, I mean, it's like kind of hoping he gets back to ownable. I don't think that he's ownable. I don't like him.
Do you not think in Utah system though, playing under Schneider, that there's going to be minutes there because of the prioritizing on defense? I know they've had this offensive surge recently, and Rubio and Gobert, you know, sussed out how to play the pick and roll basketball. But I think that the type of player that Crowder is right up Snyder's street. He can play the four and stretch the court, which is what they've been, you know, they've been desperate for a guy that can play the four with defense and is able to stretch the floor. I mean, he's not going to have high volume offense, of course, but I think that we could go back to seeing, you know, those good defensive numbers. I think we could see double, you know, regular double digit scoring. And an uptick in threes. I think that you know, his value does go up, in my opinion. I think he's found himself in the perfect place. So maybe we just you know, agree to disagree on that one.
Well, I'm not saying that his value isn't going to go up. I just think even if his value goes up, I still don't want him. That's my point, I guess.
I think for me, like when they made the trade, I was kind of excited. Just exactly what Craig was saying. You know, I thought it was a good fit for both parties. But the corresponding move that I thought would happen and that didn't take place was Derek Favors. I thought getting Crowder would kind of be like, oh, okay, now Favors is gone, and now Crowder steps in. And if he takes over that role, then, obviously I think his fantasy value, you know, goes up. But they kept on to Favors. So now... Yeah,
the fact that they're different players, though, I think they can coexist in my mind. I mean, for as good as Joe Ingles has been lately, he has shown that, you know, he is worn down. He isn't capable of playing this 32, 33 minutes night in, night out without it taking some kind of negative effect on the court.
They love Royce O'Neal now.
So do I, because I'm a Baylor guy, you know?
Yeah, I like him too.
Oh, is that where he's from? Good. I never heard of him.
But again, you know, if you want to be pushing and successful in making that playoff run, you can't be relying heavily on Royce O'Neal. I mean, he's doing a fantastic job, but he's not a highly skilled player at that. You know, teams will figure Royce O'Neal out very, very quickly, and Royce O'Neal does not have the skill set or athleticism to really be able to counter it. But the fact that Crowder's just a completely different guy to Derek Favors and gives a different dynamic on both ends, really, I thought it was exactly what Utah needed. Without sort of changing anything from a stylistic point of view, they get the strong defense. They're able to stretch the floor even more with the front court. I think it hurts Favors' value a bit, but I don't think, you know, Crowder's value was at an all-time low. And I'm not no Crowder truther or anything. You know, isn't a guy that I tend to go out and draft in fantasy, but I definitely think it's a positive for the Jazz in a real life perspective, and I think it's definitely a positive for Crowder in a fantasy perspective.
You think 24 minutes or close to the 30 minutes?
Given the style that Utah play, I can see, you know, closer to 27 minutes. I think there's 27 minutes readily available there. Give Jay Crowder 27 minutes in that system, you know, his usage rate, you know, it's not a high usage rate guy anyway, but it's going to increase without LeBron James around. You definitely see more three-point opportunities. And, you know, Utah play tight D. Well, they do most of the time. I know of late it hasn't, you know, it seems to have changed a bit. But I'm not saying go out necessarily and trade for Crowder. I'm certainly not. But, you know, if you've held on to Crowder and, you know, you've been wiping your tears away, you know, there is some hope of him actually having some kind of holdable value.
Crowder's that classic stretch three, I think we can call him in Utah. But I think most people wipe their tears with Crowder by waving him already. I mean, he's sitting on waiver wires in a lot of leagues, and I looked at him, but there's a lot of good players out there. I don't know. I just couldn't recommend Crowder. I guess Craig's saying possible recommendation there. Keep an eye on him.
Let's not dismiss the people who play in 16, 20, 24-man leagues as well.
Oh, yeah.
If you're sitting in a 20-man league, you know, you're sitting and you're holding on to Crowder and you're praying for dear life.
Yeah, I mean, you're also holding on to Anton Zizek, probably.
Anton.
So, or what's his first name? Monte. Zizek?
Monte Zizek.
Oh, okay. My bad.
He'll be a good player at the time.
You think he got minutes tonight?
Yeah, but I think the Cavs had about six players available.
Yeah, I know. I was scrolling through it.
Jose Calderon played, you know, so that's all you need to know.
So what's so did we finish with all the Cavs moves, dumping Wade? What about Elfrid Payton of the Suns?
Win-win for both, wasn't it? Magic got something, at least. Helped their tankathon. And I know that a second-round pick doesn't seem like you know, a great deal, but they weren't going to get anything anyway for him. Phoenix got a good look at a potential point guard for them down the road, a chance to possibly offer him that contract that Payton wants. If you've got ambitions of winning, you can't really have Payton as your starting point guard this day and age. You know, when you have point guards that can't shoot, pretty much leads to a losing record, I think. And I don't think that at the moment that's too much of a problem for Phoenix. But I thought that, you know, it gave them a chance to have a good look at Payton without giving up anything. I think Magic got something when they weren't going to get anything. And, you know, it helps the Magic in their tankathon, doesn't it?
What about fantasy repercussions?
I don't think anything massively changes other than the fact I think Booker's value probably takes a hit because the ball handling opportunities won't be there so much. But at the same time, you know, Booker's definitely banged up at the moment. This rib injury has definitely been affecting him. From Payton's point of view, I don't think much changes. Heavy minutes are going to be there and readily available. You know, they're desperate to have a guy handle the ball. I think it frees up. From a real point of view, it frees up Booker to do what he does best. And it actually makes Phoenix a better team. But at the same time, you know, it's very difficult at the moment to make Phoenix a worse team. So I thought it was a win-win all round. I know the price doesn't seem that high that, you know, I heard people going, oh, Payton should have gone for more than a second round pick. But, you know, the Magic are tuned in to tanking this year. It helps that Payton was gone anyway. And they got a chance of speculating on a second round. I mean, what's your thoughts, son?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps Payton. You know, the Phoenix, like, they're bad. And, you know, they play at a bit real high pace. They don't play defense, so there's going to be a lot of possessions. You know, the key is, you know, is Triano going to give him minutes or is he going to get dicked around like Vogel was doing to him? I would imagine that he's going to get close to 30 minutes, so that's probably going to be better than what he was doing in Orlando. And, you know, he's proven in the past that he can mess around on a nightly basis. So I think Devin Booker, I think his value actually increases because, you know, they were playing him at the – yeah, I do, because they were playing him at the point for a while, and he was kind of like – he wasn't as aggressive. You know, he was just looking more to facilitate, so his assists were going up, but – you know, his shot attempts, his free throw attempts, his general overall aggressiveness was down. So I think now it puts him in a more natural position.
Do you not think some of that was to do with the rib injury, though?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, for sure. It's injury is definitely a concern as well. So, yeah, that definitely could have been a result of that. So, you know, we'll definitely see how it works out in the future. But I do think he's more comfortable in the off-ball position, and I think that might have been one of the reasons why Phoenix decided to make his trade in the first place. My question is, what happens to Josh Jackson? Because he was playing really well at the two, getting a ton of minutes, a ton of shot attempts. Now, if you got Elf at the one, Booker at the two, Warren at the three, where does that leave Jackson? You know, they're going to put him back on the bench? That doesn't seem kind of wise.
But I don't think that's wholly a bad thing, though, do you? I mean, you're talking about a guy who was a freshman last year. We're not talking, you know, a four-year college player or anything like that. The upside's there. There's still going to be minutes readily available, and Josh Jackson does have the game to play multiple positions. I don't think necessarily being that sort of sixth man spark plug off the bench in your rookie year, you know, a year removed from your freshman season. I mean, it's important to remember, you know, he started really slow at Kansas.
He did. It took him a while. Yeah, it took him a while to get into the position.
And, you know, it was the same thing this year. You know, it took him a while, but it took him a while in college as well. We've still not anywhere near the best of Josh Jackson yet. You know, highly skilled, highly athletic player.
I don't necessarily think
in his rookie season, you know, let's see what he can do in a sort of sixth man role. Let's give him 26, 27 minutes on the bench. Let's see what he can do, you know, in the 2, 3 and the 4. It doesn't seem necessarily fair given the fact that, you know, he's turned it around. He's doing everything that he wasn't doing, you know, being much more efficient from the field. His defense has stepped up in terms of his, you know.
He's involved.
he is balling. But at the same time, let's remember, you know, he's what, 19, 20-year-old that was a freshman last year. You still got to handle these kids with you know, kid gloves. You can't. This is just throwing them out there on a losing team sometimes can be detrimental, I think. I don't think it'll affect his value drastically, Josh Jackson, but it is going to affect his value a bit. That's my thoughts, anyway.
I'm like Sun, though, Craig, because because Sun's point was, you know, they had been throwing him out there at the 2, 3 and the 4 all season, and he wasn't really, you know, doing much. And then he finally settled into a position and was starting to do really well. And now you're flipping him back to sort of that, let's try him out kind of everywhere again. And to me, Josh Jackson seems like someone who needs structure. You know, he needs a consistent thing that he's doing. I don't know that he has the basketball IQ at the moment to understand what you need to do at each of those positions, know the different plays you need to know from those positions, know the different spacing. I think he needs to have a position that he just focuses on, and we saw what happened when that happens, and he did really well, and now we're throwing him back kind of to see it make. So I'm with Sun on this one. I think I'm worried about Jackson's value here this season.
For that, to get the best out of Josh Jackson in terms of an asset, you need him to learn how to play all three positions. You're in a tanking season. Why not go back to doing that?
We're talking about fantasy value this season. Is all of a sudden he lose a lot of fantasy value, though, going back to that?
He's going to take a hit. But I don't think it's necessarily the worst thing in the long run.
Yeah, no, I can totally understand that. I need to get your thoughts on, we were trying to figure out this Emmanuel Mudiay trade to the Knicks. What's your thoughts?
I actually just think Mudiay is not a very good basketball player, to be honest with you. I thought it was very much a Knicks move. I thought it was a move that they didn't need to make.
Exactly.
I think that it can work in terms of Nelikina is capable of playing two. He has those lengthy arms and he has the defense. But it just seemed like a bit of a confused move. I certainly won't be rushing to the waiver wire to add him. It definitely seems like some kind of point guard Mongolian clusterfuck going on there at the moment, which basically means that none of them
are. They give away second round pick for that too. It's like, why?
I just thought it was, you know, a bit of poor front office management, really. I think I never have rated Mudiay as a player. He looks like, you know, he's been in the league a couple of years now and he still looks raw. He still looks naive. You know, you're talking about a guy that I don't think is a particularly good decision maker, isn't a particularly good shooter. He still looks like a really, really raw point guard. And I actually just have serious concerns as to whether he'll even be a very good backup in the NBA, let alone a starter. So it wasn't a move that I liked, but then I just don't see Mudiay as a really viable asset. And I think Denver was so desperate to get off of him that they were willing to take anything, I thought. So I don't think it helps anyone, really. in that situation. From a fantasy standpoint, I don't think it matters anyway. I think Denver were ready to move on, or were moved on from him. It just makes New York, a whole sort of situation where who knows what to touch. You know, I thought Trey Burke might have had some kind of value. Talk about post-type sleeper, point to prove. You know, we've seen it with Michael Beasley, where he's been able to carve out value in this new chip on the shoulder. I want to prove I belong in the NBA. And I thought there was an opportunity for Trey Burke to do it. And I thought it was actually quite a good fit, because Trey Burke is kind of very opposite to what Anil Akina is, and they potentially could coexist. And I thought that Jarrett Jack would move at the deadline, and those two would have a chance to, be yin and yang to each other. But as it turns out, they added a fourth point guard and just created this whole who knows what's going on. So, yeah, definitely a very confused move for me.
Yeah, for sure. All right. I know Brent's got to get off soon, so we're just going to hit on one last topic, and then we'll call it a night. But in terms of non-trades, Tyreek Evans not leaving Memphis. Brent?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good move for Tyreek's value staying in Memphis. I know some people feel like, they don't have much incentive to play him, but I think what, you can't just blatantly tank and not give him minutes. So I think he just kind of goes back to what he was doing. And, you just, if you're a fantasy owner, you're happy that he stayed in Memphis. You keep your fingers crossed he doesn't get hurt, and you just go with it.
Craig, your thoughts on this?
I think Memphis have just, I've lost all confidence in what's going on there. I saw a really funny tweet the other day that said, risky moves made by Memphis recently. It said, Chandler Parsons contract, fire David Fitzdale to save the season. it has something else as well. And I just thought, this isn't going to work, is it? The rumours were that they could have got a couple of second round picks. I think they played hardball, didn't they? And it really backfired in the end. And they're saying we're going to sign into a mid-level exception. And, what if someone offers more? What if he goes for more than that? Then they basically ended up with nothing. From a fantasy standpoint, they're going to run him out there. But at the same time, how committed are Memphis really to Tyreek now? We don't know. I mean, they say they're going to re-sign him, but in their own hearts, how realistic do they feel that is? So I still think there's a tread with slight caution there in my mind.
For sure. Like, that's what I was trying to figure out. First, I was just like, they're idiots for not, getting something for him. But in terms of now, his playing time, his fantasy value, you're in tank mode now, right? You're in tank mode. So why are you going to run Tyreek out there for 32, 34 minutes a game? I just don't understand why they would do that. Brent was kind of saying, you can't make it obvious. I don't know. I have no idea what they're doing. In terms of minutes projections, what do you think? Do you think he plays in the 20s, or do you think he gets the full run that he was getting prior?
Prior. I think so. I mean, what you can't, I mean, the teams want to, players want to play to win. I mean, I don't think, it would just be so obvious if all of a sudden he, you're sitting him, you don't trade him, and then you start playing him 25 minutes a game when he's your best player. That would just be such an, that, I think I said something you're going to start seeing the fans in the stands with garbage bags over their head.
But that's okay though, because they're.
But you still want to watch a good product for the rest of the season. We're not even at the All-Star break.
They still have Marc Gasol, but they're one game out from having the worst record in the NBA. So in terms of garbage bags, if you get Luka Doncic for 10 years, then it's all good, right? But if you end up playing Tyreek and he gets you two wins on the season and you miss out on Luka Doncic, that's the worst, right?
Yeah.
There's still plenty of other quality in the draft, though, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. The top is very, very nice. By the way, good job on your Trae Young article.
It was
a nice read.
Thank you. Yeah, there's plenty of quality out there. I think that for me, if you're in that top six, it all becomes situational dependent as to what you're looking for. But I think that they're the minimal difference in those top six. And I think if Memphis, almost Memphis falls in that spot, I don't think they can go too wrong, really. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting deadline for me. And hopefully we can see some more repercussions over the next few weeks with the buyouts and the free agency.
Yeah, it's going to be fun times. All right, guys, that's it for this week's edition of the Razz Ball Basketball Podcast. I'd like to thank Brent and Craig. Before people go find out where they can find you, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Viz. Everybody out there, give a shout-out to Viz. He was out in Canada this past weekend, played in a poker tournament, got fourth. So right now he is Scrooge McDuckin in his vault of gold coins and swimming with the backstroke, making it rain. Boats and hoes. So yeah, you guys get in contact with them or in the comments, just drop them some love. Brent, where can people find you?
You can find me on Razzball and on Twitter at The Fantasy Dick. If you want to keep the conversation going or ask questions, I post daily content, fantasy baseball stuff, jokes, whatever you want. But come and find me.
Awesome. And Craig?
Storytelling 41, where these days I just kind of like to troll Brent, really, and give out some prospect tidbits here and there, both in baseball and basketball.
It keeps my notifications ringing when Craig does that, so nice. I'm all for
it. Quick question before we end: how do crumpets taste?
I think that was for you, Craig.
Teas and crumpets, are they recommended fine dining, or
No. We're much more of a scones people here. We like us. We like to call it scones.
Scones. I like scones. Very nice.
Green tea in the afternoon, few little cakes, a few little scones, and a nice English little bit of tea.
They're doing Starbucks like everybody else.
Does the pinky have to be in the air when you hold the teacup or no?
Finger definitely has to be up in the air.
All right, beautiful.
Still right. Like a system here.
Nice. All right, it was a pleasure. Take care, guys.
Thanks, guys. See you next time.
So bye from me.